This is Lori Prox here with Kathleen Todd of Valdez Medical Clinic, also a emergency doc or doctor as well at Providence Valdez Medical Center. Thanks for joining us once again. And we've been getting together to talk about COVID. That's what brought us together here on the phone line. But it's turned into talking a little bit about opening of schools, which happened yesterday. So those two things collided or happened conjointly, because we had a few cases, one on Thursday, one on Saturday. But explain the process. We've talked about this before, but we actually had two separate cases and another, and then school did open. So those two things can happen together. Kathy, explain how, you know, what the process is behind the scenes.
Well, we actually have three active cases in town that I know of. I haven't looked at my email yet this morning to know if there's anybody else, but there's three cases, and there are, in fact, people who are connected with the school, either a kid or a teacher or whatever, who were connected to those cases, but were already in quarantine before school started, so they didn't even go to school. And so the hope is that anybody who's sick or who's been exposed to somebody who was sick or had a positive test will stay home and not contaminate anybody else, so to speak. So there's going to be a lot of staying home for sniffles this year. Usually, you know, kids send your kid to school if they've just got a little bit of a cold, but that's not legit this year to have any little symptom, because we know there are a lot of people who don't have a lot of symptoms with COVID, thank goodness. And anybody with any symptoms or who've been exposed to somebody who has COVID needs to stay home. And then so that will eliminate a lot of the chance for anybody catching anything. And then they're also doing a lot of complicated things at the school that maybe aren't anybody's choice, but will hopefully keep anybody who doesn't know that they have it or doesn't know that they're contagious away from the other people. The elementary school, for instance, is having different kids come in different doors instead of everybody going through that one door in the front by the gym. Everybody's coming in different doors so that if one fifth grader is contagious today, they will only confront other fifth graders, not every other kid in the school, who will then take it to all these different classrooms. And a lot of kids had on masks, which is great, and everybody's washing everything and, you know, wiping down their desk before they sit at it. And they have two lunches at the high school and junior high, so that only half as many people are in the cafeteria at once, so they can spread out. The buses are a little bit different. You have to wear a mask on a bus. You have to, they've separated the buses so that they have K through 5 riding on one bus and 6 through 12 riding on a different bus. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of things like that that they're doing so that in case somebody who is contagious comes to the school, they won't expose too many people.
And you mentioned people could just stay home if they're sick, actually anyone, but the return is a little bit more difficult. And I know you are working out some of the details of getting back to school after you've been home not feeling well. So can you explain what that process is?
Right. So there's the problem with COVID is that you can be really contagious and not be really sick. And so you can't go by, oh, well, my sore throat feels better today. You could still have COVID and not have something that's getting worse and worse and developing more and more symptoms. And so the idea is that either you stay home for a whole 10 days, which is what happens to the people who have kind of mild cases of COVID. Usually by the end of 10 days, any viruses that you're still shedding are dead ones, not very infectious. So if you stay home for 10 days, even if that were COVID, you're not contagious anymore. But if you say, I don't want to stay away for 10 days, that was a nothing, you know, maybe I just got a frog in my throat, maybe. Then you can get a test, and when you get the test result back and it's negative, that's not 100% that you didn't have COVID, because the test isn't perfect, but it's pretty darn good. And so if you test people while they're symptomatic, that's when they're shedding the most virus, so the test is the most sensitive on those days. So anyway, you get tested and it's negative, you bring your test result back and say, yep, C was negative, and you get back into school or work or whatever. Or the third way is to say, I don't think that this fever that I have has anything to do with COVID. I think it's because of this boil I have on my, you know, on my leg from whatever. And so you go in and see the doctor who says, oh, yeah, what? Look at that. Boy, you should take antibiotics for that. And it has nothing to do with COVID, and writes you a note that says, I saw this person and I don't think they have COVID. I think they have a boil on their, you know, you don't have to say the boil part. You just have to say, I don't think they have COVID. Mm-hmm. And that note could either be a one-time thing, like the boil, or it could be a recurring thing saying, this person's runny nose is because they have allergies, and they're going to have allergies until the snow flies and covers up the pollen. So please forgive them their runny nose for forever after. Not if they get other symptoms of COVID, but just those symptoms. They can come with those symptoms. So a doctor's note.
And there's a lot of pressure on teachers, administrators to retrofit for COVID and to make a lot of changes and accommodate health. But when it comes, it also puts a little pressure to evaluate health. And to that end, the school board, and you're a member of the school board, looking to get a nurse, but that's easier said than done with a nurse shortage in America.
And, yeah, I think Sean looked at one of the nurse, recruit a school nurse sites, and it had 4,000 entries nationwide, that they 4,000 advertisements for school nurses.
Well, maybe the allure of Alaska, I don't know, but still looking for that as well.
Oh, yeah,
but
if anybody knows somebody up there, and I know that there are a lot of pediatric nurses who maybe don't think of themselves as a school nurse, but they've been a pediatric nurse for a while, and those guys are sometimes not as busy as nurses otherwise, because they can't do pediatric surgery. Everything else is being postponed to take care of COVID people, and the kids aren't ending up in the hospital as much. So some of those people are furloughed, and maybe they would like a job just for 1 year until their usual job comes back the way it was.
And it might be a good profession to get into for anyone.
It sounds like there's lots of openings.
Lots of openings. All right. And on the other front here for our community, it feels kind of like things are getting on track and a little normalized, and trying to figure out how to move ahead with, you know, the summer almost over. What are some things that we can look forward to, and what are some things that we need to be careful and vigilant of?
Well, the three cases, I got a chance to talk to Terry Lynch, the public health nurse, a little bit yesterday. And the three cases that she's working on, they're not, you know, not three people who know each other, but the common thread seems to be developing that they had gone to gatherings. And I, you know, I'm not privy to exactly what, because that's, you know, we tried to keep people's privacy. But the places where you put a bunch of people together, like we were just talking about the school, schools being very, very careful to try to keep cohorts as small as they possibly can. I met several parents who were saying, you know, my kid's class only has 11 kids in it this year. They worked really hard to make it that way. So, and then if all the adults that those kids interact with go around and go to restaurants that are close packed and you don't have your mask, or a bar that where people are wandering from table to table, so you end up exposed to everybody in the bar, including some people who had COVID the day that you were there, or church or a wedding or anything that's a lot of people that are not part of your little small circle, that has a chance to spread COVID to a large number of people. And say what she was finding was that all those people may have been exposed to the same person, but probably not. She doesn't know yet, but they were exposed to the same kind of circumstance, which is a kind of a bigger grouping of people that were in circumstances where they were not far apart or outside or wearing a mask the whole time.
We've talked about contact tracing a little bit, but I think when the first couple cases came down, it was all fairly new, and that's not what you do, but I haven't heard in meetings, I haven't heard the whole process of contact tracing. So can you speak, and I know what it is at the state level. I actually had people who listened to our interview send me the forms for contact tracing and what they ask and what they do. But to your knowledge, the process, give people an idea, if you are a contact, a close contact, what's going to happen? What are they looking for when someone has COVID and the exposure? I've heard different times. I think I've read different places 10 minutes, but I think in the forms and documents that I've seen from the state, it's if you've spent 15 minutes with someone. Well,
so the CDC is saying 15 minutes. The state of Alaska initially said, well, let's do 10 just out of caution. And I think they may have gone back to 10 to 15. Can you really judge exactly how long we've been on the air so far? I mean, you probably can because this is what you do for a living.
There's a little timer right here.
People would have a hard time. 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I don't know how long I was with that person. And it's partly a matter of how many viruses fall on you all at once. But it's also a matter of, you know, you could get one cough in the face from that person, and that would be plenty. So it's not like, oh, if I stay away from everybody and never have anybody in my face for more than 9.5 minutes, that I'm fine. It's a cumulative thing. And so, you know, we're trying to do the cohorting so you're not exposed to as many people, and the stay away from people because the longer that you're with them, of course, the more chance, if they have it, that you're going to get enough virus on you to actually trigger an infection.
And I think the important thing to note might be that you have to, if you do have COVID, then the first thing they're going to ask you is to recall. And I don't know, the older I get, the tougher it is to recall how many people you actually, you know, you've been around. So that might be a good gauge for people because what you could.
If your memory's worse, you should have a smaller bubble.
Yeah, I guess you won't be able to keep track of that. It is a small town, and of course, privacy is a issue. And I know early on cases in Anchorage, there were, it just seems like there are wild discrepancies between what was reported or not reported, certain industries reported and not. Here, it is, anybody can get COVID, and it is all hopefully with the best intent to prevent the spread and not to spread the word, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and it really will be helpful. As you say, I hope that it's not like, oh, you had COVID, you're a bad person, because it really could be anybody. Some of the people who, you know, have gotten it, already been through their quarantine, gotten over it and whatever, they can't tell where they got it at all, and they weren't somebody who was out at a bar every day, and you know, they weren't. It was not obvious who gave it to them, and so that could happen to anybody. You know, certainly some kid who catches it in school, or who, you know, the teacher who catches COVID. Surely, that's not going to be something that's a moral failing.
Yeah, for sure. It's
Anyway, but yeah, they're going to ask you two different things on contact tracing. The first one, and the one that's already been done for the three cases we have at the moment, because it's the most important, is to say, okay, you were probably contagious even before you knew you had symptoms, certainly before the test results came back. So who did you see in the last 2 days? Who have you been around in the last 2 days? So not the person you passed on the street. We don't need all those people. Or the person that was in the grocery store at the same time you were, even though you both had masks on and you just passed in that aisle. But who did you stop to talk to, and who were, you know, who of your family was home, and who was, you know, all those things. Because those people are going to all go into quarantine because they were exposed to you, the positive person. So the first level contacts of that person are going to be in quarantine to try to stop any more advancement from you, the index case. But then they're going to do the next part, which is the part that takes them a little bit longer, is to say, okay, where did you get it from? And those people could have been contagious for a long time, i.e. 10 days, just like we said on the how fast can you go back to school or work. And so they're going to go back, you know, 2 weeks and say, okay, what, you know, who were you around? And so that, like, for instance, these three cases we have at the moment that came up kind of over a week, were they all around the same person? Because if they were, we can say, oh, okay, well, that person, that's the problem. We need to quarantine all the people that have been around that person to say, okay, don't give it to anybody else, because now that we know that you had it and you just didn't even realize that you had it, or you had it and you broke quarantine, or, you know, whatever. First they look at those, you know, the going forward part, the 2 days before, and then they say, okay, and now where were you in the last 2 weeks? And that's the part that if you've been, you know, going to everything and doing everything and not paying attention, that's the part that gets a little dicey. So that's when you better make sure your bubble is small to match your memory.
And Kathy, if you've had it already, I know I've heard there's antibody tests that will show whether you've had it and recovered. But now we're hitting the point where people have had it, they've recovered, they've maybe had it, recovered, had no idea they had it. Any new advancements in terms of understanding if you're over it, if when you hit the point where everyone's had it and we're coming out of this thing, or...
Yeah, the herd immunity thing where everybody's had it is, unfortunately, and thank goodness, a long ways off, because very few people have had it. Even some countries like Switzerland that actually were very hard hit, we didn't hear about them because they're so small, but they were hard hit when England and Italy and all those were hard hit. They only had about 50-60% of their people who had the antibodies. So either only 50-60% of the people had it, or the antibodies don't stick around very long, or whatever. So so they're not close to herd immunity. Sweden's not close to herd immunity. The United States would be even less close to herd immunity, except maybe New York City itself or something like that. The problem with those tests is twofold. One is that you may have had the disease and actually be somewhat immune, and it doesn't pick up antibodies on the test, so that would be a false negative test. And also, it checks for coronavirus, and it can't really check for just this coronavirus. So if you've had certain kinds of colds in the past, it might say, oh, you're immune, and actually you're immune to some cold and not this coronavirus. So you can have some false positives also. And so it's a good thing to do on a population level, like testing the whole population of Switzerland, but it's not very good for testing individual people. They're also using that test for some very specific medical situations, but you have to know that how bad a test it is to be able to use it when it's one individual person.
Any other advancements or technology in medicine that coming down the pike, or that's interesting? I think we spend a lot of time on talking about specific things, but I know, I'm sure in the medical field, there are all kinds of things being worked on, and you know, just in the testing alone, improvements have been made to beef up supply to get what we need, refine it more. So are there any more things beyond testing that advancements are being made?
Did we already talk about saliva tests?
I think at one point, but not today.
Yeah. Coming much more quickly than we thought, although the take-home version may still take some time, but they're very close to having a test you do on saliva. Instead of putting Q-tips up your nose, you spit in a tube, which is probably a lot easier. And the hope is that test eventually will be something you spit in a tube and you take the stick that you already own, that you took home from the store, and dip it in there and wait like you would on a pregnancy test, and it'll show you in colors whether you are contagious for COVID that day. It's probably not going to be as sensitive a test, but if we could get that down to being a bucket test and everybody could do their test before they head out to work or school that morning, wouldn't that be wonderful? do this in the privacy of your own home. If we can get the price down and the technology, right now it isn't a take-home test. It's a handed-in, get it processed test, but it's still pretty fast. And that's on the drawing, it's not on the drawing board. It's on the launching pad for pretty soon, as in a couple months. And then, of course, the various vaccines that are making progress. They're trying out all kinds of different therapies for people who actually have COVID, either to give them when they are first diagnosed or first start to get worse so that they can keep them from ending up on ventilators, or things to give people who are desperately ill. There are not any that are ready for prime time, but there are some that are a lot less toxic than some of the things that have been tried in the past. So working on all those, but I haven't heard of any that are like miracle drug.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the update. If there's nothing further that you've got to add, I think we'll wrap it up and then check back with you next week. And
wash your hands, keep your distance, wear your mask, and be safe.
Go forth. All right. Thanks a lot, Kathy.
Thank you. Bye.